track 14. Our second Past Lives feature is The Seago Story. Chris Armstrong tells the story of a remarkable Norfolk artist.
Of all the extraordinary lives of people about whom I've written in this column, I don't think any is more remarkable than that of the artist Ted Seago. His is a story of courage, of endurance, of adventure, of romance, of overcoming great handicap, all capped with an immense talent which earned him international repute and a host of royal admirers. Seago was born into a prosperous Norwich middle-class family, the youngest son of a successful coal merchant and his wife, the daughter of a Suffolk boat builder. But his upbringing was not entirely conventional for a boy of his background. From early childhood, he suffered from tachycardia, a heart condition which called for long periods of total rest when suffering from an attack. He was sent with his brother to a prep school in Lowestoft, South Lodge, also attended by Benjamin Britten, where he appears initially to have been very happy, but his health issues soon required his removal, and he moved to a small local day school. He had early developed a conviction that art was to be his future, and aged 13, despite reputedly being quite shy, he made an unsolicited request for help to Bertram Priestman, a Royal Academician who had a home in Suffolk, and who replied, inviting Seago to visit him. His relationship with his parents was not always an easy one. Both his father, the practical businessman, and his protective, if artistic, mother were angry at his presumption in approaching Priestman without any prior reference to them. His mother took him off to see the artist as invited, perhaps only to apologise for his temerity. Priestman, however, welcomed the boy, liked his work, and offered to make himself responsible for his tuition. The encouragement and friendship offered by Priestman over the following years, as Seago struggled with both his health and to overcome his parents' doubts as to whether art could provide him with a career, were of huge value to him. Indeed, Seago was to be fortunate in his mentors and sponsors throughout his between bouts of being bedridden from the intermittent onset of his heart, pursuits, particularly riding, made much more to a large country house in Road to Hounds and in local point-to-point races. His fondness for horses was a rare common interest with his father, who remained sceptical about the value of art as a career for him. And a case in Brook was Alfred Munnings, who was another to offer advice and support. But the real benefit that followed the family's move to Brook was the opportunity to gain the patronage of Lady Evelyn Jones, daughter of the 4th Earl Grey and wife of Sir Lawrence Evelyn Jones, a partner in a major merchant bank. As with Priest was direct, he simply got on a selection of his paintings, all on which Sir Lawrence had taken a lease, and asked for support. Heat. Lady talented artist, but her response to Seago suggests that he must have had charm to man. She introduced him to a house guest, her cousin, Sir Hereward Wake, who promptly invited Seago to visit him and his wife and to paint of him. So impressed was she that any of her influential she offered to underwrite exhibition of his work. Now, at this point, his father, perhaps surprised at the ease with which his talented 19-year-old son had permeated the crust of society's upper echelons, began to believe that art could, after all, perhaps be the basis of a career, and insisted on meeting the cost himself. Almost half the exhibits were sold on the opening day. Now, several of the pictures at the exhibition had been of a gypsy encampment near Brook, and Seago was attracted to the nomadic lifestyle. He approached Bertram Mills, whose name was at that time almost synonymous with the circus, to ask whether he could travel with the company to capture its colour and vivacity on canvas. Mills agreed, and Ted spent nearly 2 years travelling, the time interspersed with side trips to complete commissions for some of Lady Evelyn Jones's aristocratic circle. Life in the circus could hardly have been more different from the milieu of his portrait subjects. It was rough and tough, and initially he was not warmly received by the troop. Eventually, though, he became accepted and established a rapport with three horse-riding brothers called Baker, falling in love with the eldest, Tommy, who, although apparently reciprocating the affection, was to marry one of the girls in the troop. They remained friends, but Tommy died young, leaving Seago very distressed, a pattern which was to be repeated twice more. It wasn't just the circus whose colour and vibrancy attracted Seago. He was entranced by the ballet, painting ballerinas in both Paris and London. But in the immediate pre-war years, much of his work was undertaken in respect of commissions from the social elite, who had embraced him as a colourful figure, if one occasionally given to pranks, which misfired. One story is that he once brought a pig that he had chloroformed into the drawing room of a hostess who had irritated him, hiding the animal behind the sofa. Hearing footsteps, he joined the pig before his hostess entered, accompanied by a man other than her husband. Turning the light off, they started to embrace passionately on the sofa behind which Seago and the pig were hiding. Seago tried to creep out of the room unnoticed, but the pig, returning to consciousness, snorted loudly, causing the couple to turn the lights back on to discover Seago midway across the room on all fours. But for all his hijinks, Seago was aware of the deteriorating situation in Europe, and some of his travels there, as war approached, were spent in part making drawings of subjects likely to be of interest to military intelligence, and then overpainting them with an innocuous landscape which could be removed afterwards to reveal the original. Seago had a good war. Having managed to circumvent the normal medical, which he would certainly have failed, he was commissioned as a camouflage artist with Southern Command. Again, his genius for winning influential contacts paid off. The commander-in-chief of Southern Command was Claude Auchinleck, an enthusiastic painter who took his camouflage officer on tours of the Southern defences. Seago was an imaginative camouflage designer and much in demand as a lecturer on the subject. When Auchinleck moved on to India, he was succeeded by another painter and admirer, Harold Alexander, who not only arranged studio accommodation for Seago, but who accompanied him on painting trips as a relaxation. So close was the relationship that when Seago, after a bad heart turn, was dismissed from the army, Alexander invited him to Italy, where he was by then in command of the Allied army as a personal guest for an unlimited period. Post-war, Seago split his time mainly between his home in Norfolk at Ludham and cruising in the boat he had converted into a mobile studio, which he sailed to Holland and to France on painting expeditions, once having to be rescued following a collision with a buoy which came close to sinking the boat. Each year, an exhibition of his work was held at a London gallery. These were so popular that queues would form long before the exhibition opened, and eventually admission could only be by numbered ticket, and visitors were restricted to buying one canvas only. One particular patron was Queen Mary, who visited an exhibition to view the portraits which Seago had been commissioned to paint of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth, and a painting by him was one of the wedding presents received by Princess Elizabeth and the Duke of Edinburgh. The popularity of his work amongst the royal family was widely shared. King George and Queen Elizabeth were particular admirers. The Queen, later as Queen Mother, became the beneficiary of an annual gift of one of his paintings, and this affection for Seago, a regular guest at Sandringham, continued down the generations. The Duke of Edinburgh, in 1956, issued an invitation to accompany him on the Britannia for a cruise of Antarctica, and they regularly painted together on board. Seago's collection of canvases painted on the cruise he donated to his host. The Prince of Wales also became a great admirer. The royal family were only part of a huge collection of distinguished admirers to be seen from time to time in Ludham. Seago must have been quite a charismatic man, and the connections he forged in artistic and theatrical circles were legion. For his years in Ludham, he had the companionship of Peter Seymour, who was with him until his death in 1974 following a brain tumour diagnosed and operated on in Sardinia, where he had a studio. Flown home, he died in London, leaving a huge body of his work, a significant proportion of which was destroyed, as he had insisted. Now, I owe a debt of thanks to the Cromer-based artist Frank Halliday, who suffered the misfortune of having me as a member of his art class on a number of cruises a few years back. Discovering a one convivial evening that I was from Norfolk, but woefully ignorant about the work of Seago, he took me to task in a firm but kind way and aroused my curiosity enough to make me start researching this great Norfolk artist and extraordinary charismatic man. And author's note, almost as soon as I had begun to write this article, I realised that I had set myself an impossible task. There is no conceivable way in which to do justice to the life of this remarkable man in a magazine-length piece. But in the best mastermind tradition, I decided I'd started so I'd finish. There are many versions of the life of Ted Seago, both online and in print, and if I've whetted your appetite for more, I would especially like to draw your attention to two published biographies. The Other Side of the Canvas by Gene Goodman, published by William Collins in 1978, and the sumptuously illustrated Edward Seago by James Rattle, published by Lunt Humphreys in 2014. Read either. Better still, read both. Each of them enjoys a foreword by His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, reminding us of the fondness the royal family has for Seago's art.